Log Talk Radio.
What's happening? It's that time again, ladies and gentlemen, on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour, and you have reached us live once again. This is the K. Thompson Live Show. I am the son, Citizen Payne. K. Thompson is on assignment in heaven. my mom would, she always called. You know, first off, we want to send out all of our condolences to everybody that lost people to gun violence. This weekend, unfortunately, last week, week before last, and throughout, it's too often that we have to say that, and it's unfortunate that we have someone that's at that address called the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that still does not get it. Let me backtrack. I think he does get it. He does get it. It's just that his objective and his belief system is one of white supremacy, and as well as being a con man and just having his own interests where he uses everything. And even the people that he thinks that think that he's on their side, they don't know when it comes down to it, he will do the same thing to them. But it is true. It has become true to us. And it was true already to, I'm sure, my co-hosts and my mom that this guy was a racist. You know, if you've listened to previous broadcasts, I always gave him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I didn't think that he was quite a racist. I thought that he was like a lot of these folks who, you know, say things, but, you know, since they have a couple of black people that they know, they can't really be racist. But you know what? The slave owners had black people that they knew also. They had black people that they knew also. And they were quite friendly with them and cordial and you know, they were connected with them. But that didn't mean that they really loved them. And, of course, they looked at us as subhuman, as this man does. And I don't know what it is about individuals who want to keep oppressed people, who want to look at other human beings as subhuman, who just hate the fact that people exist. There are some of these people that hate the fact that other races exist. And if you look at their reactions towards the outrage that many people have, righteous people have. I'm saying righteous people because it's not just black, brown, and people of color. There's a lot of white people out there that are righteous people that are appalled by this and that are the total opposite of these people. But to have that supremacy, that white privilege, that has the perspective that when we complain about it, when we say something about it, how dare we say something about our oppression? How dare we say something about the brutality that we've received in this country? So this is a belief system by some of these sick individuals that a certain people, kind of people, are beneath them. I think it's because they know their true history, and they're upset that certain people perhaps look like the original man, the original woman, the father and mother of civilization. So maybe that's what has their goat so much. But let me bring in my co-host, my brother's here. First, let's bring back let me open the mic for my brother Byron Saunders. I know he has a lot to say about the subject. Byron, how are you this evening, my brother?
Well, it's nice to, let's put it like this. It's always nice to be on this show because we have so much information to share, bringing truth and wisdom and clarity to issues that people may or may not be aware of, and using history to kind of validate our proof of truth and facts. You know, and so I was in New York for the last three days. I was there for a reading of a new musical play, an Irish musical of all things, and I was stage managing. So this is for the Broadway Bound Festival on Theater Row. However, back in the swamp, that we know as DC, and I got a new name for the swamp. I don't think the swamp is appropriate, because the swamp actually has good elements of the ecology that keep the swamp flowing. Okay, you know? So I think it's better appropriate to call D.C., especially down there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, call it the cesspool, because that's what
right.
it is.
That's right.
You know, I'm not going to debase a swamp because, the you know, we got some amazing Everglades in Florida that are swampland. There's swampland
in
the
natural part
it's
of our environment,
thing.
The world.
That's right. That's right. But you're talking about, now let's get down to the dung, because I can't say that other word on radio. But so we get to the dung of the earth. That's a cesspool, okay?
Right.
And that's what
right.
we got going on over there at the White House. And I can tell you, I'm going to give a statistic, and maybe I'll wait till Wayne. Is Wayne coming on tonight? Because it'd be nice to have
yeah,
him back.
Yeah, he's waiting to get on. So let's bring Wayne in. Our brother Wayne Gilman is back. Back black.
Yeah.
And
still
better
black.
Than ever. Legendary, still black. Legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How are you this evening, my brother?
Just
Welcome
fine,
back.
Just fine. I really felt bad missing in action last week, but thank God I'm here, you know, still on this side of the planet. And,
That's right.
you know, every week the news cycle changes. I know there was a lot to talk about last week, but the shootings, regrettably, the shootings that have occurred in the last 72 hours, basically or beyond, you know, it's just a sign of the times. It's a defining moment that at least I just hope that this time we're not waiting for the cycle to change about some other nuance that someone else has come up with to just make, you know, to distract from what's going on with the issues out here. There's a certain, and Byron read my mind, I, you know, he called it a cesspool. I was thinking it's an outhouse. It's pretty much the same, you know. It's just sad that this guy has been able to basically take the American culture and government to this level of decadence. You know, I knew the old Donald Trump, as you mentioned at the outset, Eric, you know, your mother and I covered all the cases that made him popular or unpopular here in New York. But, you know, I can't even fathom. It's someone who told me, as you know, the whole world was in a level of disbelief back in 2016 that he would have actually won the election. It's just amazing. And then in the space of 2 years, you know, it's not your daddy's Republican Party anymore. It's like some subversive white nationalist group that only seems to cheer on certain issues that basically satiates this president's needs, and that's it. You know, talk about autocracy. You know, this is what it's come down to. And we have to be out here. You know, I'm saddened by what's going on in El Paso. God bless them for being so strong. Same deal in Dayton. But every urban, exurban, suburban environment has to come up with this level of vigilance to protest so people in his position know that there are consequences for his outrageous statements, tweets, and response. Because he said one thing the other day off a teleprompter, and overnight he's already stirring the pot with his political garbage. And I have to say, thank God Joe Biden woke up this afternoon. I don't know if you had a chance to see any of that address that he did in Iowa.
I
watched most of it, and I just think that we need to hear more of that. You know, I mean, not just from Biden alone, but Democrats have got to lockstep and stand strong. I know this weeding out process is very time consuming and difficult, but you know, it is what it is. And going back to that whole swamp scenario, they're predators in the swamp, and we just need to eliminate the ones that are existing there. And that's
You said something interesting about it's not your daddy's Republican Party, but it is your great-great-great-granddad is Republican Party, if you know what I mean. And or maybe it was the Democrats back in the day. I don't know that some of the more racist, you know, I think maybe Woodrow Wilson was a member of the Klan or a couple of the presidents, and Byron, you could attest to that. But there was a time when presidents, you know, I mean, who was it, Woodrow Wilson that showed Birth of a Nation in the White House, screened it, and said this is a praised it, gave it all kind of praise. So, yeah, we've seen this before. And as African-Americans, we've experienced this before. We didn't expect to go backwards, and we didn't expect that subculture to come to the forefront. And to be quite honest, I was surprised that people still harbored, so many white people still harbored such racism, such deep-seated racism. I mean, you know, you would think that as the stereotypes fall away and black people as a whole are better known and exposed to the larger culture, you know, the larger population, that maybe they would say, oh, you know, some of the stuff that I've been hearing or thinking or been taught all my life is not actually true. You know, as people started loving Michael Jordan and Oprah and black people were celebrated and were being known more, you would think that maybe would change some people's hearts. But apparently that we're mistaken, right? It hasn't changed some people's hearts. And another thing I want to say is that this man literally has people running in the street for their lives. If you notice the news, you guys probably know by now about what happened in New York last night.
Yeah.
With the motorcycle backfire and it caused a stampede. There was also a situation in Salt Lake City where someone said something about a shooter in a mall. People were running just yesterday or the past day or two. There was a situation at some corporation where there was a man with a gun where people were panicking. So this man has caused all kind of havoc, confusion, and chaos. And the question that I have to you gentlemen is, do you think that's intentional? Because when someone caused chaos, you know, that's when they can create the scenario where they can get away with what they're trying to do. And we already see what Moscow Mitch is doing and what they're trying to do. And it seems to be they're trying to have a global network of supremacists. What do you guys think about that? What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, the notion of and there's another active shooting engagement as we speak in Baton Rouge at a Walmart. I haven't got any more details on it.
Wow.
This sickness that, and I want to look at it at two levels. Everybody wants to call it mental health, okay? The issue of having a gun and those who engage in the massacres, they somehow had a mental breakdown. I just want to ask a question, though. The pathology of gun ownership. If you have a gun, and you, let's just say you got one gun, and you go out to shoot and practice shooting. What are you shooting at? Ultimately, if you're shooting at a target, you're destroying the target. If you're shooting at a tree, you're destroying nature. If you're shooting at an animal, you're destroying animals. If you're just shooting at a leaf, you're shooting and destroying once again. Something, an inanimate object, you know, an alive object, you're destroying it. So in my mind, if this is nothing but a mental disease, the ownership and the desire to own a gun is a pathological disease and has to be engaged in such, because the only thing that a gun can do is kill. It's
That's right.
Something. So why are we looking at, and then here's the, as mental health, but here's the real issue, guys. And this is something that's got to be discussed and put into perspective, because in America, right now, today, what was this, August the 7th, 2019, there are over 350 million Americans in our country. Do you know, gentlemen, as of this moment, there are over 300 million guns in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And over 50% of those guns are owned by 3% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Their targets? People of color. Every tax dollar collected, over 60 cents of that dollar goes to the defense budget. And what does the defense budget do? It contracts all of the gun manufacturers to make all the guns and weapons of war, and then they end up being purchased by Americans.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but to also say that you're talking about these tanks and these extreme weapons of war that many of these police, a lot of the police forces have across the country.
Two soldiers came back from Afghanistan within the last couple of weeks on a commercial airline, the tubing for a hand surface-to-air missile. Two soldiers returning from Afghanistan on a commercial airline checked in the tubing from bringing it home for, I guess, a souvenir, bringing home the tubing for an air-to-surface missile that a soldier carries. Now, why would he need to bring that home?
And where would you sport shoot that? even if you're bringing it home for just for sport shooting, it's an air-to-surface missile, so what would you shoot in the air just for sport? You know, like, what, skeet, pull?
Well, I'm so glad the TSA picked up on that, you know, and I understand if they're going to use the excuse of sentimental value. I mean, in World War II, you know, I saw, you know, little things that obviously counted as weapons, you know, beyond my comprehension as a child, that my dad would show, I used to use this when I was in the Philippines, or I used to use this when I was in Normandy. But, you know, surface-to-air missiles, you know, I mean, clearly, it's just off the charts. But, you know, I think also at the same time, I mean, we got issues with the NRA, but this is a societal thing. There's got to be some uniformity. Yeah, there are a lot of people who are strapped, who are legally strapped, and most of them don't look like us. We're well aware of that. But there are problems with those folks who do look like us, and we have that whole dimension with black-on-black crime. I think that we need to move to what's going on in England and some of the other European countries, where they have gotten a hold on having, you know, guns. I'm not saying that there isn't a certain level of lawlessness, but not to the point of what goes on here. You know, they don't have people with AK-47 rifles, you know, machine guns and things like that at their disposal, because they realize that this is for mass destruction. And and that's it. You know, I never forget, a couple of years ago, I was an attorney friend of mine. His brother-in-law had a party, and I was invited to it. He lived upstate New York, and I'm not going to give up the names, but this is a very traditional Italian family that lived upstate New York. And I was astounded about his gun collection in the in his game room that he had on display. And this guy, you know, and I'm the only spook in the room, and I'm listening to what he's saying, and I'm sitting there in amazement saying, you know, what is his preoccupation? I mean, I know there's television reception up there if you need entertainment, but I mean, to bring somebody into your private area just to show what weaponry you have at your disposal, and where do you go with that? What do you do with it?
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, some of the people out in the Midwest and stuff like that, I've read, you know, that you know, help is like an hour away, you know, when you have, like, law enforcement that covers 20 square miles or whatever they cover. So, you know, I understand, you know, and they're made, you know, weapons are made for destruction, protection, for hunting or whatever. Bottom line is destruction. As a tool, it's used for protection. So if you're out in the middle of the bump, wherever, in the middle of the boondocks, and you have to be concerned about your own safety, I understand it. But also they talk about, and one of the issues is that nobody, you know, a couple of discussions, a couple of shows today, that nobody needs that much firepower. You know, they were
exactly.
saying, you know, back in the day when that Second Amendment was written, people were talking about muskets, you know, and
mm-hmm.
not AK-47s and MAC-10s and you know, all these exotic or all these long guns as been the weapon of choice for a lot of these shooters. So, you know, the average person on the street, like you're saying, why do you need a collection of machine guns, right? And you know, it is a thrill to shoot a firearm. I've shot one before. After the initial shock of shooting it, you know, or you walk in the gun range and it's so loud it makes you kind of jump a little bit. But after you start shooting, you know, you get a kick out of it. Okay, you shoot, you know, but why, like we say, the obsession with having so many, and if you like the machinery or whatever, but still the bottom line is that these are weapons of destruction. So, you know, you want to go out and shoot and shoot a machine gun to see what it feels like, or shoot a, you know, 50 caliber gun to see what it feels like, and that's it. That's it. Who are you going to use that? And I guess if you live upstate like that and you're worried about people robbing you or whatever, that could be to a certain degree. But, you know, I think more people have to worry. The people of color are the people have to worry about mobs coming after them, right?
Exactly.
You know?
And to your point earlier, Eric, I mean, people like the Michael Jordans, the Oprah Winfreys and all that, I find, you know, and I'm not looking to disparage the entire white race, but the deal is that there are some people who may not be progressive whites, but just observe black folk who are like that and consider them an exception. But, you
right.
know, the deal is that I still find that racist in their thinking anyway, because
yes.
the average person who does not amount to what wealth that they've come in contact with, And I really have problems with some of us who step away and don't look at us the same way that as we did when they were coming up and rising through the ranks. You know,
mm-hmm.
it just is disturbing that they can't see the subtle racism within that and the nuances within that. You know,
right.
And it's just sad that you know, we still have that issue to face. We also have the issue of accessibility. I heard someone talking about boycotting Walmart because they have a tendency. I mean, I guess outside the city, I don't really see it around here. But the deal is that I know if you go to Florida, I believe as nearby as Pennsylvania, and I have been to one in Maryland, and I've seen where they have guns for sale on display. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know how easy. I've never purchased one, but there's got to be an end to all that. You know, I mean, it's just the avail. I understand the right to protection, but you know, how do you weed out? Because the person I just described to you was a professional, was not in law enforcement, but was a lawyer. His brother was
mm-hmm.
a lawyer, and
mm-hmm.
the thing is, they have a legal background, and they're you know, they're saying on TV, they're talking about people who look out of place and strange and crazy, that, you know, society should step up and if you see something, say something, inform the authorities that, you know, someone may have peculiar behavior. Well, I felt going to this family's home and witnessing his gun collection in his game room as peculiar behavior. I mean, do I report him? Here's somebody who's got a law license, you know?
Right. Right.
He passed the New York bar. What am I
right.
supposed to say then? Is he sick?
Hey, they're good. There's crazy lawyers out
yeah.
there. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily peg that as someone having being crazy or being someone that should be on one of those lists, depending on the behavior. Like I have friends in the entertainment industry who live out away from Los Angeles. Like
mm-hmm.
in an area, a very rustic area. You know, one of my particular friends, you know, he had a 9mm. I think he might have had an Uzi at the time. for his own, you know, part of his collection, or one of those. I don't know if he had a machine gun or whatever, but might have one or two of those. From, you know, because doing the work, and you meet people. If you're in the business, you meet people, you come across things, and also where he lived, you know, was very rustic. So I can understand that. My question is, when you see one of these cats, like if we look at the last two shooters, and most of the recent the shooters, they seemed off. They seem off from the picture.
Right.
From their mugshot, you could look at him and say, "There's some seem a little strange about
strange.
This." Look at the look on his face. So when this individual walks in a place to buy a firearm, what's up with the salesperson? I mean, you know, I know you got to make a sale, do whatever, but it's certain responsibilities selling something like that. So I have to question the person who sells these individuals a gun, knowing this dude is sitting here with a twitch, or, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, you didn't know this guy seemed a little off, and you sold him the gun anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these two statistics that you have to just take in consideration. Just since 1968, more Americans have died from gunfire than have died in all of the war in our country's history.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That alone should tell you something about the pathology of gun ownership. Who's more crazy? Let me ask you a question. Who's more crazy? The young man who goes off, who's just snapped, went in, killed 20-some people, wounded 20-some people. Who's more crazy? That individual or the individual who's politically on Capitol Hill has a chance and opportunity to make change happen with respect to the proliferation of guns, and yet they are sitting there silently. Only can offer condolences. What kind of mental state of mind is that person?
Well, that's an impeachable offense. You're right.
Because we have to then begin to question the rationale of wanting to put those kinds of weapons out onto the street. You know, we can talk about black-on-black crime as much as we want to, but the guns that our black-on-black crime people use, white folks would never be caught dead with those weapons because they're secondhand, couldn't hit the side of a barn if you were standing in front of the barn trying to shoot it.
So that leads us to believe that maybe there's
guns out on our streets. So the fact is, there's only one logical solution, gentlemen, and that is reduce the number of weapons. You cannot, in no way possible, convince me that the logic of the maintaining the proliferation of weapons in the weapons industry is going to give us peace on earth. I don't believe it. It has never happened throughout the history of mankind. So who's sick? The young man who goes off, or the people who are in denial, keeping guns out in front of us as the weapons of choice instead of or making peace? We're going to make peace with a gun? I doubt it, sir.
Well, is it sick, or is there a bigger plan in motion? Is there a different objective other than what they're letting on? Because clearly, if you think logically, right, the logic thing is to say, okay, let's just cut it off right now. We know we want to have everybody have their rights to have what they want. We don't want to curtail rights, but this is what it is. The facts, the reality of the situation is it's out of hand, so we need to do something to stop this problem, right? So if you once you know that and you still continue on doing the same thing, that must mean that, well, maybe that's not really your objective, the way you're talking. Maybe you have another objective, and the reason why so many guns were proliferating within our community is because maybe part of their objective was being achieved if we were killing each other off, right? Maybe that's part of their objective, that the other lesser people, as they probably like to think of us, were killing each other off. So let them have all the guns. Let them have all the drugs, you know? Like the line in The Godfather, they're animals anyway. Whenever we talk about selling drugs to black people, they're animals anyway. You know, that was the perspective. So clearly there's another plan at hand here.
But I agree with you to a certain extent, Eric, but I also feel that, you know, they make themselves vulnerable by doing that too. who's to say?
Yes.
I mean, if the NAACP were to go in lockstep with the NRA, you know, you talk about white folks going out in masses trying to get legalized weapons to, you know, to prevent any kind of racial conflict, you know, in this country. I always say that if suddenly the tables turned that way, there'd be a different agenda. But the problem is that the fact that we have gotten to a point where we have this level of lawlessness, and the fact that this man who's running the country is cultivating the atmosphere for this thing to foster. And
well,
that's what I'm saying about, you know, the Republican Party, because they're in lockstep, as you call him, Moscow Mitch. You know, anything this guy wants done, he rubber stamps it without even a second thought. You know, it's like they wind him up to say one thing on one day, and then in fewer than 24 hours, he's out tweeting his real agenda in another way, you know?
Of course.
Then he's got a whole network of idiots that tend to support him.
Let's just take a look at hours of tweeting, just on this incident alone. First
take a look
hour,
at what?
I'm so sorry this happened. This is our president. I'm so sorry. Second for the 12-hour cycle. All right, maybe we should have serious checking of your names and background check. That's the second 24 hours. The next 24 hours, he has totally reversed on all of those and said, no, it's now a mental health issue. And that what we and it's not racism, but it's a mental health issue. And now we don't need to have the politics is not there to reduce the or bring back the 2004 law in which we banned weapons of mass destruction, the AK-47. You know, we banned that weapon. So when you talk about over the 48 hours or 72 hours, he goes from sympathy to let's condone racism and hatred, and then within the next 24, 12 hours or less, he goes back to, well, we'll have gun checks, you know, background checks, but we don't have the taste or the there's no effort on the political side to ban automatic weapons again. That's a sickness.
It is a sickness.
That individual is sick.
Oh yeah,
and he's
exactly.
Playing that game. And so I'm really fed up with the press and the media going along with, well, let's give him another chance. So he gets on, and he's really sympathetic. Don't buy the hype,
means,
people. That's right.
It means nothing.
Yeah,
it means
nothing. And I have been. I think a lot of the press. Well, a lot of the press coverage I've seen, they're not really giving him that pass. You know, I mean, not as much as they used to. I mean, they're calling him out. I've seen a number of people calling him out on it, and except for obviously his network. I'm sorry?
Yes, but to what effort are the press calling it out when they don't go as far? As I said this last week, there wasn't a mumbling word about gun regulation in the last two debates. Nothing.
Right, right.
And that, other than racism, tell me the other most threat to our national security in this country.
Well, yeah, that should have been a question asked by the press, the moderators at the debate, certainly. And that's a separate question. I ironically had that discussion yesterday, talking about the debates with someone, and they were talking about the format and the questions they answer. We all know that they'll ask certain questions are asked to elicit whatever response, and obviously the way the debate is structured is to cause candidates to engage. And we have to remember it's TV, so they have to engage in a dramatic style, right? So it caused some of the questions are asked to create a confrontation. So you know as well as I do, Byron, that drama is what attracts people, right? Conflict. So when you have, I mean, if you think about it, nowadays, you remember when presidential debates and things didn't have any commercial interruptions. But now they've got to compete. Now they actually take commercial breaks for debates. So the fact that they have to do that shows you they still have to keep eyeballs, and they're using that to sell time. So the nature of the debate has to be such to keep people engaged that don't have the capacity to really follow what's going on, right?
Right.
So, that's kind of what they have to do to a certain degree, right? Remember the old line, and Wayne, you would know this too, if it bleeds, it leads. Who came up with that? I mean, news outlet came up with that?
That was the mantra of the Daily News, and the thing is that it still, to a certain extent, exists, you know, on a universal level when it comes to the media business. But at the same time, you know, we still have that other network that basically is spewing misleading information, and there's a constituency that seems to support that agenda. And I think a lot of it is not to say that everyone who works in that company of Fox is racist, but they have enough people who promote what Roger Ailes started and to have an impact. And I'm talking about the Tucker Carlson's, the Sean Hannity's, Ingram lady at night. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just, you know, it just saddens me that they have capitalized, and it seems to be like a playbook now. I was watching a show overnight on CNBC where this guy, I can't think of the host's name, but he goes around fixing businesses. And he was in a situation last night where he was trying to save a company in the Midwest, and the owners, two entrepreneurs, one with a business background, one actually who was in radio, and that, you know, caught my attention immediately. And he admitted on national TV that he makes a living doing racist talk radio. In other words, there's now a category, you know, if you're promoting a certain agenda, and the deal is the Howard Sterns, the Don Imuses, Bob Grant, who your mom used to compete against, they've sort of created a venue now, a platform that, you know, somebody, and I don't know what state they were in. I know they weren't in New York. I didn't recognize the guy's name. But the fact of the matter is that he had the stones to get on TV and say, hey, I do this for a living, and then I run this business on the side. And thank God CNBC, the host, I can't think of the guy's name, had the common sense to say, you know, I'm not looking to support your business because of what you do on the outside to fuel income to save this company. And the fact that you have no minorities working for you, and then the women that you have working for you, you treat them like excrement, you know? So what do you expect? I mean, the business was falling apart. But, you know, the deal is he was trying to justify that the so-and-so person that he was off the air was radically different from the person he is on the air. And I'm saying, you know, there must be some schizophrenia there, because I don't know of anyone, you know, when you see me and you hear me, this is who I am on and off the air, you know? And the deal is you got my name. I've been doing this as Wayne Gilman for 1,000 years. It ain't going to change. And the deal is my agenda is not going to change. If you want this product, this is how I roll, period. But this guy, you know, basically has exposed that there is, and I mean, I'm not living in a vacuum. I know that this goes on. But it's astounding that he got on national TV and said he made a living, you know, making people of color look stupid, and try to explain his technique. You know, I mean, this is what that Fox crowd that supports that network, that's what they buy into, and all the other little nuances politically that satiates their their need to cover their fear of people of color.
Well, that's exactly what those networks do. That's what I mean. They're all make livings doing racist media. I mean, that's what put Rush Limbaugh on the map and all the rest of them. They've been making a living. It's just the crazy thing is that because of the climate created by 45, is that this man felt comfortable enough to say that on TV and to admit that, you know. And these people, they wanna, you know, be racist friendly, be cool with racist stuff being said, but say, well, I didn't say it. I mean, you know, they always have their little loophole, their little I'm losing the word right now. Semantical word that they or phrase that they want to say to play around that, right? To get around it, you know. It's like their argument. I can imagine that many of their arguments for supporting Trump, when people say, "Well, he first came out saying Mexicans were racist," and they're going to come out, their response is going to be, "No, he said when Mexico sends their people, they're not sending the best people. They're sending rapists and all that." So that's the loophole that they keep telling themselves. So when they agree with that statement, they're able to tell themselves, "I'm not racist," because that's not, he didn't say they were racist. He said when Mexico sends its people. But we know what he means, and they know what he means.
Right.
Deep down. But they try to get away and say, "I'm not a racist." What? Just, you know. I mean, come out and say it. You know, you do racist talk radio, that's who you are. You think that's cool, that's acceptable to you, because it's not a life and death result. We come from a line of people where that's a life, that type of stuff is life and death for us. So
well,
for them to say that is you know, malarkey, so to speak.
it's just god awful. I just think that. I mean, it's not to say that we would never see this sort of thing happening just based on the origin of it, but the fact of the matter is that this is what's holding us back. And I don't even think for one minute that it's ever going to, you know, get any better until there's some wholesale revolution in this country. And it just saddens me that it gets... That it still comes back to violence and guns and you know, I just think it's, you know, disrespectful that this president even had the stones to go all the way to El Paso and visit those who were in the hospitals, knowing full well his rhetoric is what stirred the pot, you know, to at least bring things to this level, and that's it. Yeah, I don't see how they could separate the two. You know, I go back to that scenario I've said time and again about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan admitting that he cultivated the atmosphere for Malcolm X's murder. Admitted to it. This guy is clueless, you know?
Well, I that's the whole thing. I don't think it is clueless. I think it's intentional. He's intentionally doing this stuff. So to create strife, to create division, and his true feelings coming out. Clearly, he has a history of racial animosity towards black people as a whole. I mean, dating back to the Justice Department having to sue him and his dad because they were trying to keep black people out of their housing, out of their apartment building. So clearly, this guy has a history of being racially, at the very least, racially insensitive, if not prejudiced and racist. My thing is that, you know, people keep thinking that somewhere there's going to be some silver lining, or that he spoke, you know, at least he made a statement. No, we see what you do. We watch your actions. We're not listening to your words no more. This guy's got no credibility anymore along those lines. But and we need to, as Democrats, need to understand that this is what they've chosen to do. There is no need. I think we were talking about this yesterday. There's no need to assume or to try and reach out and get those moderate Republicans who might get tired of Trump. The hell with them, man. They're not coming back. They made their choice. It's obvious what they think and what they believe. So let's get more people that agree with us, more people out to vote that agree with us, register. Let's do the work to expand our party as opposed to always thinking that we need to reach out. And I think that that's a form of people who support. You know, when there's people in our party who happen to be of a different hue of us, that support that mentality, I think there's some latent kind of affection for the other folks. You know what I mean? Even though they might say we're not, you know, like some of them say, I don't believe that all Trump voters are racist. I wouldn't have believed it at one time either, but yeah, now I do. You know,
well,
and I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear some candidate say that. That's, and even if you believe it, it's not the time to say that. It's the time to, if not challenge them, to prove you're not. And when
right.
I hear people like Klobuchar and some of these other lukewarm, and I understand where they come from, I'm not going for that, man. Just in the same way that I'm not impressed with the Democrats, and in particular the black Democrats who choose to go after the record of the first black president, and certainly Democrats who choose to go after the record of the most recent Democratic president, certainly when he put a program of health care into place when there was none. So, you know, we've all got to get on the same page and let we don't have the luxury of human nature, you know, our natural human desires or shortcomings to get in our way, because we as a people, we get the short end of the stick. America catches cold.
You're absolutely
black
right.
People catch pneumonia.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, there that will always be a phenomenon within our community. I mean, I know we're not the monolith, and the deal is that we have varying points of view, but it saddens me that some people can't see the big picture and see what advances and that we've made. And I couldn't think of any. I mean, every day this guy, the current occupant, opens his mouth, makes the legacy of the departed look so much larger than life, you know, that, God, you know, you just wish for a day where somebody's running the country and that their personal issues are not the preoccupation of front page news, you know, and what they do and just the psychological temperament of the person. You know, what Byron was saying a moment ago, that the man is sick. There's a pathology
yep.
with him that, you know, makes no sense. And I can't understand why even the Fox Network can't, some of the commentators there can't see what's going on, other than the fact that they buy into that agenda, that they want
to
promote that fuels it, you know?
That's who they are. They're not
yeah.
buying it. That's who they are, you know? So, I mean, we understand. I mean, the big thing is that there's other news outlets. You got the Newsmax and One America Network. I don't know if that's still on, but these other networks, even to a certain degree, the TBN Network, Trinity Broadcast, which is supposed to be the Christian network, which airs Huckabee, you know,
yeah.
the fake preacher, the racist preacher, you know. So, I mean, that's who they are, man. They are. They believe in that supremacy and that racism and stuff, and that they're better than. So, I mean, I accept them who they are. They tell me who they are, I'm going to believe them. You show me who you are, I'll believe you. And then I'm going to act accordingly.
That's it.
I'm not going to assume that you, especially when the lies that have been perpetuated to build up the myth of this country, of these people coming to save the country and having to battle off the savage Indians and bring this subhuman species of people to toil the land, and they couldn't do anything, and we had to teach them and show them everything, when the exact opposite was true. It's a made-up myth fairy tale that they tell themselves to make themselves feel better and to hide from the truth of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you know? So we got almost 12 minutes left. On Byron, you still with us?
I'm right here.
Okay, let me ask you guys, and this is what I noticed. About what came into my mind as I saw these various clips of people running for their lives in these various locations. And the 66 people shot in Chicago over the weekend. Wayne mentioned it also, too, the black-on-black crime. But here's something that, and I found this interesting during 9/11, too, that America on a whole, you know, for the first time I saw not just black people, but everybody, and I'm going to include, for the most part, I'm speaking about white people, not having to experience what it's like to not to go out your door and not know what's going to happen, whether you're going to be able to come back the next day, and or the same day, And, you know, a lot of black mothers and a lot of African Americans feel that on a daily basis now, whether their young black child, black boy, is going to make it home back that evening, either through hands of another black boy that looks like them or hands of the police officer that's supposed to protect him. And now, like 9/11, the rest of America knows that heightened sense of alertness that you have to be on, you know? And it's just interesting to me, because what popped into my mind is like, yeah, now y'all know what black people feel like all of our lives in this country, you know? And I don't wish it on anybody, but it's just a little bit ironic. I don't know if you guys, if that's something that came into your mind, but I'd like to get your thoughts about that, or whether you feel that way, or what your perspective along those lines.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's something I've been in conversation with up to yesterday. I mean, even before we spoke, Eric, I was juxtaposing life in the city versus life in some of the suburbs, not all, but some. And, you know, I have been grateful that with what little work I've done with my life, that I'm in a position basically to sample both. And it saddens me to think that, you know, the place I call my primary, I'm afraid to sometimes to come out at night, because I could just go down cruising White Plains Road at midnight and, you know, and innocently be the victim of misplaced gunfire. I remember dropping a friend of mine home 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was before I even had my little operation the other day. And a friend of mine lives in the West Bronx. And it's just above Yankee Stadium. There's a lot of redevelopment going on, because I know this show goes cross country, but the Bronx is bouncing back, as the old expression says. But there is one pocket that basically is an area where Spanish is widely spoken. Most of the occupants are from the Dominican Republic. Not everyone there, and this is not to denigrate the Dominicans and things like that. But the bottom line is that there's some people who maintain that old ghetto culture that need not exist. And I remember just dropping my friend off at some minutes to midnight, and then I had to go down the block where, you know, the music was blasting and they were stopping cars trying to negotiate an intersection, and they were looking in each car to see if somebody had something that, you know, either they were going to hold me up or snatch or, you know, that sort of thing. And I just said to myself, you know, why must someone have to live like this? And I don't want to sound like Donald Trump. I don't want to say, I mean, but it's that kind of nonsense that I just think that, you know, I immediately emailed my friend back. I told her, I said, this is what happened, and I'm not saying that it happens 24 hours, 7 days a week, but it's that kind of nonsense that I find, you know, just totally unnecessary. And the deal is that I've gone into areas in Mexico, and I've seen poverty, and I've seen begging. You know, I understand what people who have needs, what they have to go through, and I have a kind heart. You know, if I see something, I can help somebody, you know, at the risk of hopefully, you know, getting out of wherever I am alive, I'm going to try to help that person. But at the end of the day, what I find so unfathomable, that some of us have to live this way. And then I go into other areas, and, you know, there's no concern about being, I'm not saying that they're immune, but there's no concern if you go out at midnight and go down to the waterfront. No, you don't, you're not concerned about somebody looking to take a shot at you, you know, or something like that. And, you know, it's like, I want to get to a point in our society, hopefully. You know, I'm on the third act here, so I don't know how much longer I got. But I'd like to think before I leave this planet that at least that problem, you know, is eradicated. And there's no reason why we all collectively cannot respect and embrace each other's cultures and show mutual respect for one another. You know, I came up at a time, you know, where as a child, I remember, you know, little black ladies in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, you know, taking a mop out and mopping the sidewalks at night and at day and leaving the doors open, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe that's too far-fetched to think with today's, you know, permissiveness and all the technological advances that we've made to think like that. But, you know, there's a yearning for that in my craw. You know, when I go on the subway, I want to feel like I could go down to 42nd Street and not have to worry about this piece that they keep rerunning on the news, you know, where people are running for their lives because a motorcycle backfired. You know?
Right.
It is what it is.
Well, in regards to me, to a certain mentality that people have, like you mentioned, ghetto mentality, or there's a certain, you know, it's kind of like that whole, I'm reminded of the phrase when people say snitches get stitches, don't snitch and all that other stuff. There's a certain mentality that has become acceptable, and I call it living down to the expectations, low expectations that people have. And within a certain community, certain pockets of our community, people that have been left behind or haven't been able to enjoy that part of the American dream, there becomes a desperation. A kind of, you know, a dog-eat-dog, survival of the fittest. And that aspect of community and all being one is lost. I mean, you know, I reference it to going back to my grandmother's old neighborhood when I go on that block and see what has happened and see a lot of the people that could be considered immigrants, I don't know if they are or not, but of a certain ethnic background that seem to be the ones that are working hard and trying to have a piece of that American dream. And some of the individuals, not all, not a lot, some of the individuals that happen to look like me are out doing the negative stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of jokingly say, I've been saying to people I know, not all of us are ready for the promised land. You know, not everybody's going to make it to the promised land because not all of us have that mentality, you know. And we want the mentality, and media has done it, I think, to perpetuate a certain perspective about things. I think also when people see an individual who's clearly flawed from, and we got 2 minutes to go, guys, so we're going to have to jump off, but when they see it coming from the top of someone who has no respect and not presenting how we should act and morally be towards each other, then people figure all bets are off. Certainly when they see those that are usually lauded in society getting away with the same things that they try to get away with and getting away because they have power, money, and influence. So, you know, it's no wonder that people are at the, you know, it's like the Wild West again, like when the country was first formed, right? You have seen these movies about old Wild West towns, and you had the outlaws and the regular townsfolk who were trying to get a decent living, and it was kind of a every person for themselves type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's no wonder that certain individuals take that perspective. It's like I keep saying, our people don't have the luxury to emulate certain behaviors of larger cultures because we're the ones who suffer the most. So there it is. Byron, you want to jump in before we have to get off? We've got 1 minute and 53 seconds. So
I'll be quick. I know y'all don't know this, but in Galveston, Texas, two horse-riding policemen pulling a mentally ill person down the street in like he's a runaway slave. Now, if that picture doesn't tell you what's going on in America, we're in serious trouble. We better really be versus this because this racism thing is out of control.
These folks want to take it back, and I've put that picture on my Facebook page. They said they didn't have a transport for the guy, so they did it like that, and they allegedly got reprimanded. But it is Texas, so that's a country unto itself. And then they had the individuals, the concerned individuals at the meeting. They were all one hue. But give us your close out, Brother Byron Saunders. We got a minute.
Peace and love always. And remember, you got the power. Use your power to make change happen.
See you next week, Brother Byron. Brother Wayne Gilman. I was getting ready, Wayne Saunders. Brother Wayne Gilman.
I'll take it. Yeah, I tell you, I'm sorry I didn't see that Galveston story. It reminds me of the James Byrd case. But,
Yeah.
You know, it's just sad. And I just hope things get better, brother. That's all I could say. You know, I keep hope alive. All right, there it is.
Thank you, Wayne Gilman. We'll see you again. We'll talk to you again next week. All right.
Okay.
This has been the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can hear us most Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. live, and we're also archived. Once again, I'm Citizen Payne, and the son of K Thompson, who's on assignment in heaven. Love you, Ma. Talk to you guys next week.